The November general election is November 8th. I'm Dave Crooks from the DLC Media News Center. On this weekend's Focus on the Community, we shine a spotlight on the challenger in the race for United States Congress in Indiana's 8th District. Ray McCormick of Vincennes is the Democratic nominee. He will face Republican incumbent Larry Bouchon, who is attempting to win his 7th term. Learn more about the Knox County farmer and conservationist on this weekend's program. Ray, welcome to Focus on the Community.
Well, good morning, Dave, and I appreciate you having me in on this special, beautiful weekend here in southern Indiana.
Well, it's Labor Day weekend. I know a lot of people are tuned in. They're out camping, trying to get their final weekend in before fall gets here. And first of all, for those that may not know you, give a little background about who Ray McCormick is and what you've done all your life.
So I'm a fourth generation conservation farmer. And I've been working on conservation my whole life, but my family has a background in trying to do public service. My grandfather, Clarence, he was Undersecretary of Agriculture in the Truman administration. So he set a good example of working for our country and not just on the farm. So I've worked all my life trying to help communities and trying to help with taking care of the land, and been to Washington, D.C. dozens of times. And I farm corn and soybeans. Most of it is non-GMO, so it's going for human consumption. I have about 40 head of cattle. We do construction work on conservation projects with our equipment. I have a duck hunting business, and I have a peach orchard. So, you know, back in the 80s, Dave, when you had to do something to survive farming, I tried all these different adventures, and now I can't give up the money, you know? So it's a lot on your plate, but fortunately I have a son that is now 42 years old. He can handle it, and he's out there moving dirt today and doing some conservation projects for the NRCS and so forth. So it's my time to run for office.
Okay. And of course, you know, I tried this 10 years ago in 2012. I was Representative Bouchon's first opponent after his first term. And of course, it's not easy running for Congress. Well, what motivated you to do this to begin with?
Well, as I said, I was a farmer, so I was pretty motivated to try to help in any way I could. I love conservation in our community, Indiana, and so forth. And when Hostetler was our congressman, I had a lot of interest in running against him, but my wife flat said, "You're not going to leave your father and your young son and leave us all to take care of this farm while you go to Washington, D.C." So I helped a guy named Brad Ellsworth that showed up at my office about a week after that, and he won. So I helped him with ag issues and so forth. So it can be done. This is not a special place where only Republicans win. You know, it's Democrats and Republicans. I hope people vote for the best person, not a political party.
Well, let's talk to, about that for a second. Well, what are some of the issues that you think people should be thinking about between now and November when they decide who they want to represent them in Congress? What's the biggest concerns you have right
you
now?
You know, Dave, when you get ready to run for office, you know, you say, people go, what's your platform and what are you going to run on? So you formulate these ideas that you think will be the most important to people. But times change. Things change. And now, since I've started, on my campaign trail, protecting our democracy has come right to the top. We've had January 6th. We've had a lot of things happen since then. We have people that are saying that that didn't even happen. It was all staged. And we have hearings now. We have what Liz Cheney says is not a joke. This is a threat to our democracy that so many knowledgeable people are, you know, following the lie, not following the truth, not standing up for what's right, not putting their country first instead of their political career. And look, I don't have anything to gain by going to be a congressman. I got a beautiful farm and a great wife and family and everything. I just want to help. So the way I'm going to vote is what's best for this part of the country, for the 8th district. And if it ruins my political career, so be it. You know, I'll go back to the farm. I'm not lusting for power or anything else.
Well, you and I know that the election wasn't stolen. And of course, Representative Cheney, you know, she pointed that out, that it was just nothing but a big lie. But yet She got drilled in her home state, and
she did, and
she's not the candidate for Congress now because of the fact she told the truth. I mean,
and that she can tell the truth and stand up. I can let the people know that I'm an honest person. I've always tried to be good to my word, and I'm telling you, the election wasn't stolen. And, you know, Larry Bouchon voted against birth control. He voted against veterans' benefits for burn pits. He voted against infrastructure. All of these things that I'm sure he says he supports, he voted against to follow, you know, his political party. And
didn't he vote against the actual certification of the electoral
votes?
He
did.
Yeah.
He did. And I'm sure he would tell you in private that the election wasn't stolen, just like the president's men told him it wasn't stolen. You lost. And so I can't have that. If you aren't good to your word and you're representing the people of Indiana, then that's not the way I was raised. That's not what good people do. And that's what I'll never do. I'm always going to speak the truth.
One thing that's gotten a lot of people's attention this summer, and again, you look at the statistics. Usually if one party is in power, and of course the Democrats won with President Biden, and they took back the Congress, they had taken back the Congress 2 years prior, but then they win the Senate by that 50-50 squeaker with Vice President Harris being able to break the tie. Usually the incumbency or the party in power loses a lot of seats in the House and the Senate in a situation like this on what's considered an off-year election. However, since the Dobbs decision by the Supreme Court, you now have this very hot issue affecting women's health care with the Roe versus Wade being tossed out. Where do you stand on this situation right now? As not only we've seen what the Supreme Court has done, but then you've got the Indiana General Assembly. They went to record speed passing a new state law that will basically ban all abortions beginning September 15th. Did they do the right thing? Where do you stand on this?
You know, that's such a contentious issue that I was hoping that wouldn't be part of my platform. But as things have played out, I have to stand up and tell the truth. And people don't want to vote for me because my position, then so be it. But when Roe v. Wade was decided, I went to a rally on the riverfront in Evansville. And the women that stood up and told their stories one after another was really, you know, eye-opening for me. And then I went to rally after rally and listened after listened. And it's just unbelievable how complex pregnancy is and women's health care and the issues that come with pregnancy and the loss of a child during pregnancy. And then complications can make it so that you can't ever get pregnant again, or it's a risk of your life and so forth. So as I saw all these women stand up, and I said, I have to help them. I have to show that I care about their health care and that I'm going to stand up for their rights to make those decisions themselves. Another thing that heavily impacted me was a full-page ad of probably hundreds of doctors that ran an ad in the Evansville paper of why this was such a bad idea. And when you think about it, you know, it may take you 10 years to go through college and medical school and be trained to work with women on these complex issues. And then many doctors would have a lifetime of experience. And for the legislature to say, we know better than you do as to how to decide and work through these traumatic and complex issues that come with either trying not to become pregnant or becoming pregnant when it's a threat to you, their loss of a baby. Even in my own family, and I could tell a couple stories, but I tell this one. My daughter, who was 39 years old, lost a baby during pregnancy. And she was at a Catholic hospital, and they didn't do anything. They just left it go the way it was, and she got pregnant again. And at 5 months pregnancy, she lost that baby, and it devastated not just her. She had told her children that she was pregnant, and her husband, that was their child too. They lost that baby. This time, Dr. Bernard, who did the abortion on the 10-year-old that came from Ohio that had been raped, she saw my daughter and helped her remove the past baby and so forth. And so this weekend, I have a new grandson, red-haired, 7 months old, crawling around on the floor and trying to get in the fireplace and everything. And when I look down at him, I'm thinking, because that educated and knowledgeable doctor helped my daughter, we now have this precious life in front of us that's my fully healthy and new grandson. So
third time was the charm in this case.
Third time was the charm, but okay. She got medical care that helped her be able to get pregnant again and have a successful pregnancy.
In your opinion, is abortion a state matter, or should the U.S. Congress make it consistent across the whole country when it comes to
rights? Well, I would like to see that. And, you know, running for a federal office, that's likely my role in this, is that I would not be voting for a state law and I would not be voting for a Supreme Court nominee. And certainly if a law came before me that was going to standardize, you know, abortion and women's health care, I would want to review that bill and understand it. But, you know, Indiana had a bill, and a large percentage of people said, leave it alone, leave it the way it is. So I can't say what bill I would vote for and what parts of it would I be comfortable with and not comfortable with, but I would rather have women making that decision and advising me on that. I'm not the one that should be making the decision. People should have it in their hands to at least advise me from a women's perspective and from a doctor's perspective.
So you're pro-choice, basically, is the bottom line. Is that
That's
a fair
right.
statement?
That's right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue that I know Democrats take a lot more seriously than the Republicans do right now, but climate change. Do you think that there's a problem with climate change around the globe?
It's a big problem.
All right.
You know, in Pakistan, 1,000 children drowned here in the last few days. We've had record fires out west. We've had record rainfall here in the Midwest. We've had record heat on the East Coast. France is burning up. We have dinosaur tracks that are being uncovered in rivers in Texas within the last few weeks that have probably never been seen since dinosaurs were here. And so we have this changing temperatures, rainfall events, and so forth, and those are all very serious in jeopardy to our future. Purdue University has about 72 people working on climate change. So they can tell you in Brazil, in Vincennes, in Annapolis, on the trajectory we're on, exactly what it's going to be like in 2050. And likely in Vincennes, Indiana, you will not be able to grow corn anymore. It'll be too hot. It'll be more like eastern Oklahoma. They call that climate shift. Where will you be in 2050? They can tell you. In Annapolis, we'll likely have 80 days of above 95 degree temperature. People are not going to survive. We are not going to survive unless we reverse that. What I'm running on is we have the tools to do that. We can sequester carbon down into the soil, grow more food, more nutritious food, and essentially make it a positive by using the energy of the sun to sequester carbon into the soil. So it's called the soil health movement. It's caught on. I've worked on it at a national level. It's caught on all over the world. So if we're going to feed ourselves with a growing world population, we have to do it with biology. And that biology starts under our feet. That's why my campaign slogan is, let's grow our future.
So you would work with scientists and all the professionals who could give advice and give suggestions and ways to reduce the threat of climate change. It sounds like you'd be on board with that.
You know, that movement, this movement that's going to save the planet, it started with farmers. So it didn't start with scientists. It didn't start with universities. It's farmers that began to understand how to put that carbon back in the soil. Carbon is the basic building block. It's the most abundant element in your body and my body and in the soil. And it exactly matches the percentage of what's in the soil. Because think of it, Dave, we came and developed from what we ate, which is a percentage of the elements in the soil. So not only is our makeup of our bodies just like the soil, so is our DNA. So we literally come from the soil. The more we build up and make our soils healthy, like they were before we cleared the forest and started growing nothing but corn, when we had a diverse habitat and healthy soils, we had more healthy food and a more stable climate. So farmers landowners are going to who save the planet. We already know it works. Scientists know it worked now. And so it's just a matter of getting these practices on the land.
Medicare and Social Security are top of mind issues for a lot of people. And I've noticed there's some television commercials that are running right now that claim that the Republicans have a plan to where they would like to privatize or make that different. I know that I touched on that when I ran 10 years ago, where it seemed like in his first term, the representative was open to the idea of privatizing Medicare. First of all, would you do anything different to either Social Security or Medicare if you were the next representative?
I think we just did it. So making insulin affordable, that's a big deal. Making medicine affordable. You know, that's something I struggled with as a farmer and so forth, is when my wife moved to a different practice, we lost our insurance, or I lost my insurance. So there I am, a big farmer, no insurance to protect myself. And I would have had to make tough decisions if I had had a heart attack or cancer or so forth. So the availability of insurance to help protect us, the availability, one of the key things, Dave, that's happened in rural America, it's probably happened in Brazil, I know it's happened about everywhere, is we're losing primary care doctors. So if you don't have somebody to go to and you got to go to a hospital, I would say that's a big issue. Now, making things more affordable for seniors, that's a big deal. So that's a change we just made that I think's a big one. Privatizing it will end up just being like so many things that are privatized. Then you'll have insurance companies making the decision of what they cover and they don't cover. It'll be profit motivated, and it won't be as efficient as what we have now. So I'm fine with Social Security. I'm not looking for big changes right now. We want to make sure that everybody's on Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security and disability and so forth, that they're not gaming the system. I hear stories about that, and that's a difficult needle to thread. But we want to make sure that the people are receiving it, deserve it, the people that do deserve it, get it, and they have a quality of life that they deserve in their last years of life.
My biggest personal cost, health insurance. And I'm a former state legislator, and even though there's a perception that I've got some lifetime benefit, I do not. I did not take that package. But as a person who has 10 full-time employees, one of the most frustrating things for a small businessman like me is that every time I get my renewal notice from United Healthcare, it's 10, 15, 20% annual increases every year.
Yep.
And as an employer, you know, not only do I provide, I mean, I know the government says if you're going to provide, you got to pay 50% of the employee's premium. I pay 75%, okay, because I want to help my employees as much as I can. But it makes it hard for small business owners like me to not only continue to maintain that kind of coverage when it's constantly double figure increases every year, it makes it tough to give raises on top of that, chasing that constant increase. What can we do to maybe make healthcare more affordable?
Well, you know, I can sympathize with you because as a farmer, I didn't have an employer, so I paid all of my own. So I had like an $18,000 deductible, $18,000, and it was costing me about $900 a month before I became old enough to get on Social Security. So there you can see I was trying just to protect myself from catastrophic an event happening and paying dearly to have that protection. A lot of people can't afford that kind of protection. Soaring healthcare costs are a combination of things. That isn't going to be something easy to answer. But my wife is a doctor and so forth, so I hear a lot about how they're cutting into what they pay her, both insurance and on the federal government. But again, your premiums are going up. So there's a profitability thing. But, you know, one thing that happens, Dave, is if we don't have a doctor right down the street and you have a big cut on your arm, you can go down there to my doctor and he'll put some iodine on it and he'll sew it all back up and you got to pay him $40. You go to the emergency room, it could be what, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 before you come out of there.
If you're lucky.
So people going to a hospital for care versus a local primary care physician, that's pretty costly. And so that's one example. And, you know, I was in the hospital the other day. I had some issues with my throat. It's very expensive to go into hospital and so forth. So hospital costs certainly aren't helping there.
I was prescribed a drug recently by my rheumatologist, and I found out that it's normally $5,500 a month, but I can get a deduction if I use the mail order pharmacy. It's $2,400 a month. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to spend $2,400 a month for my copay for a damn pill. I don't know how people are doing it. I mean, I can just see why people just throw their hands in the air. Now, I will say this, just as my own personal opinion, we're part of the problem from a standpoint that we're not as healthy as we should be. A lot of people don't exercise. We eat all the wrong stuff. We're overweight and obese.
Why are you looking at me when you're saying that?
No, you're in better shape than me, Ray. But my point is we've got to take some personal responsibility, because that does drive up the cost of health care. If people get diabetes early because of their diet and so forth.
Dave, if we live in a food desert, if we live in Vincennes, Frichton, or we live in inner Evansville, and you got to go 20 miles to Walmart to find a vegetable. So part of our diet is the availability of fresh produce, of good food. If you're eating out of a stop and go and you're having honey buns and Mountain Dew, that's going to catch up to us.
Yeah.
And it's going to catch up to people. So part of that is living healthy lifestyles, but part of that is brought on by the consolidation of what we buy in like a regional market where you have to drive there to even buy food. So that contributes to it, and it contributes to climate change, because if Dave has to jump in his car and drive 20 miles to get his groceries versus walking down the block here, is that's a problem.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I want to make sure that if there's anything else you want to touch on, I know what's on people's minds right now. Employers are struggling to fill positions, so we've obviously got some challenges in trying to fill the jobs that are out there. Anything that we can do to perhaps make our workforce not only make a little more money and benefits, but what do you think the Congress can do to help typical workers, let alone employers right now?
Well, what we had is during COVID, we had a massive wave of retirement. So I go around and I look at people that are younger than me on the campaign trail, and they say they're retired. They're retired. So we had a lot of really experienced and good workers that retired. Secondly, we have childcare issues, which can be, and we're trying to take care of those at a national level. But if your wife or, you know, cannot go to work because the babysitter in there or the childcare is too expensive, or you can't even find childcare, the father or the wife is not going to take a job because they aren't making enough money to offset childcare. So that's the number two reason. Number three, with all the rhetoric and so forth, we've choked down immigration, and this may not be popular, but we've got jobs everywhere in healthcare and farming, everywhere in food service, where we need employees and we need them bad. And they need to be able to work hard and be reliable. So as we choke down immigration, we're not filling those places where we're losing workforce. Fourthly, which is unbelievable to me, is a lot of young people don't have driver's license and don't own a vehicle. One third of the people going into the military right now do not have a driver's license. So if you're going to work at Sunrise Coal in Oaktown, how are you going to get there?
So, well, and I read the other day, like only like 23% of eligible young men for the service are not really eligible because they're too obese.
Yep.
So we've got an issue there. Housing's got to be an issue for a lot of people. They're struggling to afford buying a home or even finding enough places to live, whether it's an apartment setting. What can the Congress do about that?
And, you know, on the campaign trail, you talk to people, so you learn about these issues. I didn't know that housing was such a big deal, but in everywhere you go, there's, you know, a lot of our cities in southwestern Indiana have been there for a long time. Homes are old. Young people can't afford to spend $250,000 to build their starter home. Just the infrastructure of a septic tank, a driveway, utilities, and the piece of ground uses up their down payment. So they can't afford to build a home. They're not making that kind of money. So they're using it all up on rental homes that are very old. A lot of times, most of the time, absentee landowners who don't really care about the condition of the home. So they're using up a lot of their income that could go towards a home for old rental homes. Well, if you're a business, Dave, and you're going to start a new factory, or you're going to start a new business in this area, and you can't recruit in young people because there's just a lack of housing and quality housing, a place for them to live, it's going to hurt your community. Then it also drags down the tax base, because as these old homes begin to deteriorate and a lot of them are tore down, you're losing tax base out of the community. When you lose tax base out of the community, you lose the ability to fund schools. Young people definitely won't want to move here with families when you don't have high quality schools in the area. So it's a very complex problem. It's going to take big solutions, and we got to get on it, or it's going to really hurt southwestern Indiana. Whether it's Evansville or whether it's Brazil, it's a big drag on our economy.
If people want to learn more about you and your campaign, is there a website they can check out?
Well, they can go to RayMcCormickForCongress.com, or you just look out your door, because I'm everywhere, man. So, I'm going everywhere all the time, and I'd look forward to just meeting you one-on-one and visiting with you. If you'd like to volunteer, you can go to our website. If you want to donate, you can. But I'm just loving going out, across the country of southwestern Indiana. Great stores. Who would have known, Dave, that $6 coffee was going to save our communities? Every little town has a place that's thriving selling $6 coffee. I didn't know.
Well, Ray, thanks for taking time to visit with our listeners today. And Congressman, you'll get equal time if you or your aides are listening to this. I'm always fair to both sides, despite the fact that Ray and I are of the same party affiliation. And I wish you the best. I mean, I spent 18, 19 months trying to beat Larry, and it just wasn't the right time, I guess, but I gave it all I had. But I think running once was enough. But
I think now is the right time, and I so appreciate you having me on.
Well, we may have you on again before the election is here, because 9 weeks from Tuesday, I think, is election day, so it's creeping up. So
every day's valuable.
Yeah, so get out and get registered if you're not registered to vote already, and vote for the candidates of your choice, but at least participate in our democracy, because a lot of people gave up a lot to make that happen.
All right, Dave, I got to get going, because we got parades to get to.
All right, Ray, thanks again for your time. Ray McCormick, the Democratic nominee for U.S. Congress in Indiana's 8th District. You can learn more about him at RayMcCormickForCongress.com. I got that right, correct?
You got it.
Okay, have a great weekend, Ray. Thanks for your time. This has been Focus on the Community, produced by the DLC Media News Center. This program is broadcast Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. on 1049 WAXI, 7 a.m. on WAMB, AM 1130, 1069, and 99.5. Sundays at 6 a.m. on 1055 WVIG, The Legend, and 7 a.m. on Sundays on 92.7 The Rock, WFMB. For a download of this show and other past programs, visit any one of our radio station websites. I'm Dave Crooks. Thanks for listening.